The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. Every taking us in, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It is Kelly Bidlin. Nothing gets me more fired up than talking election betting, Kelly. Get your juices flowing, baby.
Like, I'm looking at all the ridiculous props that are up.
Who says up for vice president? Nick Saban is up there.
Mr. Futak brought that to our attention. George Clooney on the list at 100-1 as well. Sure. Oprah 250-1.
Sure. Can bet on all that stuff. We get tweets at Beating the Book. By the way, Futak standing by. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Bronson C. Gill is back. Yes, I am. Thank you. Thank you for acknowledging. Forrest Lehman. Another golf year goes by. Another goose egg for Rory in Majorville. That would be 11 years for those scoring at home. 11 years in a row. Jesse Welch in a game to 11. Over under 7.5 Wembanyama blocks versus Gilly's mom's Hezzy step back. Let's see. Jimmy Lopez, are you saying I should wager on Castellanos to hit a home run after Gil announces the sushi spot? Maybe. And Gil Sushi, formerly Rick Ollier, says, I'm not one for conspiracy theories, but perhaps no one has seen Biden since Friday because he was involved in a recent kerfuffle while playing the Sigma Derby. Perhaps. Maybe. Love y'all. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the emperor of collegefootballnews.com. And he comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. It's Pete Futak at Pete Futak. That's F-I-U-T-A-K right now from the heartland. Where are you exactly, Pete? Where are you?
Chicago, Illinois, the mean streets of the North Shore of Chicago, yeah.
Well done. Let's talk some SEC. Can we talk some SEC? Before we talk SEC, do you believe that you have a handle on the playoff, right? None of us have ever seen this before. It's 12 teams this year before they do anything else. We'll do 12 this year. Do you feel like you have your brain wrapped around it? Like you know exactly how this is going to go?
To a point. And we've discussed, I think the last time I was on with you, the one big part of this is that there's going to be a lot of teams out there that can make the playoff. And remember, there's a difference between wagering on winning it and getting in it. Winning it, Ohio State, Georgia, and just everyone else, just forget about it. Getting in it, though, remember, it's going to take just 10-2 to get in that top 11. So there's going to be a whole slew of teams out there that are going to be in mid-November and be like, you know what? We're 7-2 right now, or 6-2. We win our last three games. We're going to be in this thing. Like last year, Missouri gets in, for example. Ole Miss gets in. Oklahoma would have just missed out. So there's a lot of teams out there, and it's going to be a whole lot of fun in November because we're going to have more teams than ever who are going to be alive and kicking. But because before, you lose two games, you're out. You lose a game in early September, well, that's pretty much it. So in terms of having a handle on this, yes. And the real funky thing real quick is going to be that everyone's going to have to get ready for, there's going to be a team that's going to be college football playoff ranked, 11 and get a 4 seed because the top 4 seeds are going to be conference champions.
All right, let's focus on the SEC. 16 teams now in the Southeastern Conference, obviously Texas and Oklahoma, the additions. And it was funny reading it on your site at collegefootballnews.com, how you always go through games of the year per conference.
Yeah.
And you did make the comment, I couldn't agree more, where you're like, you could literally do this whole list with just Texas and Oklahoma games because you're so jacked up for these matchups to see them on a week-to-week basis. How many SEC teams get to the playoffs? If I said that the over-under was 4.5, you go over or under?
I'm going to fast forward to, say, late November where a Gil Alexander is screaming at me or vice versa that an 8-3-ish, Alabama should be in over a 11-1, somebody else. So if we're going with the theory that in the 10-year history of the 4-team playoff format, no team has ever finished in the top 11 of the final college football playoff rankings that didn't have, two losses, or more than two losses. That's going to be twisted a little bit because of conference championships now. So realistically, you got to figure out in the SEC who's going 10-2. And there's going to be a lot of 9-3 teams because remember, you got 114 teams in the Big Ten. You're going to have about four of them at least that are going to be in 10-2-ish range. You're going to have at least two Big 12 teams that are going to be at least two ACC teams. You're running out of space here. So for the SEC, I think the one thing people are missing is, you have Texas up on the screen here at plus 320. look at the Texas schedule. They got to go at Michigan. They got to deal with Oklahoma. They get Georgia. They've got Florida's a little bit better. They got to go at Texas A&M. They can't lose more than two of those. They're going to lose to Georgia. Michigan's a 50-50. So if they drop one more to, say, Oklahoma, they're not getting into the college football playoff unless they win the SEC championship. So you kind of have to look at it like that. It's a long-winded way of saying, I would say put it about four teams maybe set the total at for how many SEC teams are going to get in the college football playoff.
I thought you were going to say five, and I'm already mad at you about our impending November conversation.
And
I'm already mad at you.
Going, by the way. Whichever way it's going to go, I'm not sure which side I'm taking yet, but one way or another, you're going to be mad at me, and you're going to be yelling at me something.
You'll cut off the end of my sentences, and I'll be mad at you. That's going to happen. All right, well, let's take the Vandys and the Arkansas and the South Carolinas off the table.
Yeah,
let's take them off the table. What's the team that is not one of the usual suspects at the top? What's the middling SEC team that you think is ripe for a surprisingly good season?
What's funny about this is Ole Miss is actually traditionally about as middling as it gets. There's that assumption that, Ole Miss, it's a big SEC name. Ole Miss football is traditionally not a thing. And this year, it's going to be everyone's top 10. So if we're going to dismiss Ole Miss because everyone loves them right now, and you want to go kind of way off the radar, look at the Kentucky schedule this year. They've got a bunch of really bad games they're going to have to deal with. They're going to have to deal with, at Tennessee, at Texas, at Ole Miss, and get Georgia. But if they can pull off one or two of those wins, if you look at the rest of their schedule, it's really not that bad. It's going to be built for at least six. There's six wins baked in already. And they're going to be just kind of good enough where they could be one of those teams where, they get the open date on November 9th, as I'm looking at this. If they beat Tennessee before that on November 2nd, they're going to go in mid-November with Murray State at Texas and Louisville. You're going to say, you know what? If they can beat Texas somehow, they might be in this college football playoff mix. So I would say Kentucky, watch out for them if you can think of them pulling off an upset or two somewhere.
If Georgia is the number one team and Texas is number two, which I don't know if you agree with or not, but let's say they are, who's the third best team?
Alabama. And actually, I'd probably put – I think people are kind of just dismissing Alabama because of the coaching change and all that. They're going to blow up. I mean, if Kalen DeBoer does what he did in past stops, where when he stepped in at Fresno State, it took a little bit, but all of a sudden then they became one of the best passing teams in the country. He gets to Washington. Michael Penix Jr. goes off. They're the number one passing team in the country by far 2 years ago. And then last year they were it up until the very end when they got real defenses to play against. Jalen Milroe is going to blow up. He's a deep ball thrower to begin with. He's going to, in terms of Heisman candidates, in terms of stats, Milroe's going to go crazy in this. And it's still Alabama. They still have a ton of talent there. And the schedule isn't that awful if you think that they can win at Wisconsin. Otherwise, it's a little bit of a worry because they get Georgia early on. The rest of the slate's not that bad. I mean, at Tennessee, at LSU, at Oklahoma, they should be able to win two out of those three. So I would say Bama out of that group as well. LSU is going to be okay again, even though they don't have Jaden Daniels. They won't be as explosive an offense. And again, Ole Miss, they're going to be that team that finally is going to be right on the cusp. They're not going to be good enough to win the SEC championship, but they're going to be in the mix for this. And finally, Missouri, to name another team, which they get everyone back. The thing is, they didn't really beat anybody great that last year, as hard as that kind of is to do. But Missouri is going to be very good as well.
Yeah, by the way, Georgia 10.5 is their season win total. Texas also 10.5, but the under heavily juiced. Ole Miss, Bama, and Mizzou all at 9.5, followed by LSU at 9. Ole Miss over slightly juiced at 9.5. Alabama and Missouri, the unders juiced on the 9.5. We were flashing up schedules here on the left randomly. I was going to ask you, what season win total deal, but can we show Texas's guys again? Texas is under at 10.5. Again, same number as Georgia, but Texas's under is really heavily juiced at -170. But can I just ask you this, Pete? How in the hell are they winning 11 games?
They aren't. I was just about to say, except for Georgia, if you want to just go right across the board and just say, bulk, just, you're going to hit on, six out of these eight, everyone who's 9.5 go under. Because you can look at every SEC schedule and be like, you know what? There's a loss there. There's definitely two 50-50 games there, and they're going to miss somewhere else. So everybody who's 9.5, go under. Everyone who's 10.5, because you're right. Look at this. They could, Texas could lose at Michigan. They could absolutely lose to Oklahoma. They're going to lose at Georgia. Florida's more dangerous, you know, at Texas A&M. You're telling me they're going to win 11 games with this? I don't. They're very good, but I would go under on Texas.
Yeah, I don't think minus 170 is steep enough, I guess is what I'm saying. Is there another season win total before we get out of here that you sort of lean towards?
You know what? I hate doing this, but in the SEC, go Georgia over. I don't like going over on 10.5 ever, but they are just so head and shoulders more talented than everyone else. They're going to lose a game somewhere. They do have a tough schedule. I mean, Clemson's tough to start. At Alabama is always dangerous. But look at that. I mean, seriously, UMass, you know, Tennessee Tech, you know, Auburn, Mississippi State, Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's going to be tough for them, too. Florida, they got 7 wins to start. Go with 11 on Georgia, even though I really, in general, do not like going overs on 10.5 ever.
And refresh my memory, because I want to say you said Jalen Milroe, but if the Heisman comes out of this conference, it is Milroe to you?
If you're not doing my always take the field bet, only because who's going to have the monster stats? Last year, Milroe, I could make a case that he deserved the Heisman over Jaden Daniels based on MVP, most outstanding, biggest play of the year, all that kind of stuff. And this year, he's going to have the stats to go along with it in this offense.
Pete, I think I speak for you. I think I speak for so many. Can't wait for college football because it is going to be fascinating to see how it unfolds this year.
More fascinating than the Oprah Winfrey, Mark Cuban prop bet, you know, combined bet that's going to be the next president vice?
Not nearly, just to answer your question. Thank you, Pete. Always a pleasure.
There you go.
Pete Futak. We'll come back. He mentioned Jaden Daniels. Let's talk some NFC East on the other side. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The VSiN NFL Betting Guide is out now, and our all-new College Football Guide drops on August 1st. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and NFL seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats, trends, and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of July and receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and exclusive data like our betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount price of just $175. The football special discount price expires on July 31st, so don't wait. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, everybody.
What's up?
Producer number 9. So much more than a producer. You've been quiet today, Kelly. You okay?
Yeah, man.
Did you suffer from a migraine again? Will Hill was telling me last week or something.
A few weeks ago. Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
How often do you get those?
Depends, 3 to 5 times a year, I would say.
And usually, that's brutal.
Usually a few of them are pretty bad, yeah.
What is it? What do you do? Go to a dark room and lie down? And
yeah,
it's always that.
It's dark room. You usually got a TV on in the background, but it's turn down the brightness on the TV, turn down volume real low, and you can't sleep. You sit there and...
No nausea associated with it?
As long as I'm in a quiet, kind of dark environment like that, no, not real. I'm usually okay. Once you kind of get out and start doing things, yeah, that can happen. But, it's usually just stay in a dark, quiet area until you end up falling asleep finally, which usually can take a day.
Usually wake up better?
Once I get actual sleep, yes. But sometimes for a day, 2 days, it's like in and out of like sort of sleeping or just like laying there.
Any idea why it gets triggered?
Nope.
We get tweets at Beating the Book.
And before everybody tweets, you have brain cancer. Don't worry. It's been checked out.
Just don't tweet that.
The last time we talked about this on air, I got like 5 tweets that were like, yo, bro, it doesn't sound very good. You should probably get that checked out. It's like, yeah, no.
Say that. Kevin Downs wants to point out with the election segment. He did mention, because Jason was saying, where is Biden? Because, well, Biden has COVID, so he's in isolation. Kevin Downs wants to point out. I just wanted to say 2 last things about that. One, it's fascinating from so many different directions. One, also, would Kamala be better served if Biden had just resigned straight out so that she could be president for the remainder of his term, if you will? And then she would be operating as the incumbent. That's an interesting what if. It's not going to happen. Joe Biden's going to finish out his term. And then the other thing is, this is just me talking now out loud. I am surprised by how quickly Kamala became the candidate. I know there's a lot of election rules with delegates and superdelegates that they have to abide by. But I do find it a fascinating quirk or even glitch in American politics that whoever gets picked as the vice president becomes the de facto leader of your party thereafter. In other words, yes, Kamala was elected as the vice president candidate. It's not like a Gerald Ford situation where he legitimately, when he became the president, had not been elected in any way. He became the vice president because Spiro Agnew had to resign, and then President Nixon resigned. So Gerald Ford became the president without having ever won on a national ticket. But in the case of both, and I'll do both Kamala and J.D. Vance, because I heard some people saying, oh, J.D. Vance is now the heir apparent to the MAGA movement. And I just remember hearing that, being like, that's so weird that in a arena politics where everything is so deliberately calculated, that because of that one choice, that person jumps the line automatically. It's just a very strange little glitch in our system.
Wasn't he also, like, pretty anti-Trump, like, back in, like, 2016?
Oh, of course he was. That's politics, yeah, of course. And then he saw how the winds were blowing.
Right,
yeah.
Oh, it's better for me if I'm not.
Yeah. Anyway, that's just me talking out loud. I just find that fascinating about American politics,
too. I did, too, because I feel like all we heard for at least a short period of time was, I felt like to me that it was like more likely to be an outside candidate. And then after yesterday, it seemed like, well, obviously, there was going to be Campbell the whole time.
I was rooting for both. When I was this, and now I was really young for this, but like up until 1980, conventions were awesome. Like, there would be fights, even against incumbents. Like, I remember when I was little, but it was like Jimmy Carter was the incumbent. He had a terrible first term, and Ted Kennedy wanted the nomination instead. And so the Democratic convention was this loud, screaming at each other thing. We haven't had that in like 30, 40 years, and I thought this might be one of them, and we're not going to get that opportunity either. So that kind of sucks. But again, we'll track all the betting on this. And to me, again, the point of this is all from a betting standpoint, not from a political one. I'm just interested in making money. And I think it's going to be a lot closer than a lot of people think it is, a lot closer. As far as the NFL is concerned, I don't know if you know this, Kelly, but we are rounding the bend. Hall of Fame game up here. And then preseason.
When is it? It always sneaks up on me. It's always like, oh, yeah, by the way, it's this Thursday.
And remember the betting stat that we always throw out with the Hall of Fame game.
August 1st.
MLB trade deadline, July 30th, 2 days later, Hall of Fame game. August 1st. Bet Bash that following week. There's your calendar, Kelly.
Boom.
Where was I going with this now? Oh.
NFC East.
Yeah. It's just, you have you watched the Giants Hard Knocks at all?
Let's start a little bit. Not a lot.
Even if you just caught clips on Twitter.
We were talking about this.
Cleve did the review, and he's like, oh, my God. Like, the coaches are fine. The front office is a disaster.
Because I was telling you, I've kind of gotten tired of the formula for, like, yes, the regular preseason Hard Knocks. But this early offseason and the in-season one are interesting to me now.
That was my conclusion. That the Hard Knocks Classic is not interesting. Pre-preseason and then in-season are great.
It's not that it's not interesting. It's just the same formula for like 15 years now, and I'm just a little tired of it.
Yeah, it's too character-driven. Like, it's not, but these are like...
If it's your team, you're still going to tune in, obviously. Right.
But the football machinations of the in-game and this Giants one, I haven't seen one positive review of the Giants one, right? Shane is the name of the GM. That's how you pronounce his last name. That, like, even the conversation he had with Saquon Barkley, like letting Saquon know, hey, we're going to let you test the free agent market,
was so bad.
I cannot recommend it highly enough. And anyway, here's the deal about football. Organizations matter. Continuity matters. Basketball is still a talent-driven sport, no matter how bad the coaches or the front office is. If you're a great basketball player, you're one of five on the court, you're going to exert your will. Baseball's a individual sport disguised as a team sport. But football is the ultimate team sport. And organizations matter, and the Giants just appear to be, to me, the bottom of the division for sure. I know some people, you know, by season win total, it's 6.5 them and 6.5 on the Commodores. I do not view it that way. I view Washington's upside way higher than the Giants. I do think Washington can have a stinky season too, but I just think the Giants, I don't know, that Daniel Jones contract, I mean... That's the cruelty of the economic system, because they're unable to sign great guys in the secondary because of that contract. And so that's just how the contract and the salary cap works. As far as the top of the division, I just want to point out one thing.
I guess report real quick on the Giants. So report yesterday, Daniel Jones will be good to go with his ACL for start of camp. I guess there was some concerns about that. I mean, for the Giants overall, I played that win total under. It was kind of a Fezzik tale. I know that was one that he played, but I really liked that too. I'm with you. I think the Commanders and Titans, to me, I think I've decided are the teams that are, like the low-flying teams that I think have a large amount of varied outcomes. Like,
yes,
I could see, yes, I could see the Commanders causing a stir at the top of the standings in the NFC East, or they might be way worse than I think they're going to be, that I'm giving them credit for Jaden Daniels.
I want to say this at the top of the division, though, because I'm not as high on the Eagles as some others are, but yet I can see they could still win the division because of the dysfunction elsewhere. The Giants just being the ultimate dysfunction, Commanders having a wide spectrum. They could have a bad year on the bottom end of that spectrum. And the Cowboys, Jerry just not paying guys. I wonder if that becomes a sort of tacit revolt at some point during the season. But Mike Tenier, we're going to have Aaron Schatz on, I hope, this week, Kelly. Mm-hmm. Aaron Schatz writes the great NFL preview guide. Used to do it for Football Outsiders. Now he does it at FTN. And Mike Tenier has always written for him. And Tenier was describing how the Eagles' unstoppable offense for basically 1.5 seasons went flat because defenses figured out the decisions that Jalen Hurts would make pre-snap before he made them. So it neutralized their massive offensive line strength and really sort of it was fascinating to read because he was really sort of disparaging Hurts in that way. And let me just read you I just want to read this one brief thing. He says, so when the Eagles abandoned the run in 2023, it was because Sirianni or Johnson, Brian Johnson, their offensive coordinator last year, refused to call running plays. But because Hurts kept choosing passing plays when faced with neutral to heavy boxes, the Eagles ranked 22nd in the NFL with 282 rushes into 7+ man boxes. Given a box of 6 defenders or less, however, the Eagles led the league with 219 rushes. A standard 7-man box might prompt Hurts to throw an RPO pass, perhaps to someone like Watkins or the acid-washed Jones, his words, often a preferable option for the defense to a running play behind an overpowering offensive line. It's great writing. It's great use of data. So Tenier is skeptical, and my reaction is, well, will Kellen Moore fix that? And Tenier is skeptical of Kellen Moore as he goes in because he surmises that a retool was necessary for Hurts, not an overhaul, which is what Moore is signaling to do. So it just sort of corroborates my thing. Like, I don't think the Eagles are going to be as quick to catch on here as many do, and yet they still could win this division because of dysfunction elsewhere. And I stick by that. 10.5 their season win total.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game live at Bar Canada, the D. Lovely, gorgeous, downtown Las Vegas, Nevada, where it is a balmy, 107 or something today? 108? That's nothing.
Gross again.
That's nothing.
It rained last night, though.
Did it?
A little humid coming in today.
That's just in D.C. I'll tell you what humid is. We have mosquitoes here, though, now, right?
I've seen more bugs in the past 9 months of living here than in the prior 6 years.
Yeah, but didn't I saw some article where they have like a high rate of West Nile in the mosquitoes here? That's not good.
That's a little terrifying.
A little bit. Especially for those of us who mosquitoes love and adore. Mike Somich joins us, ladies and gentlemen, from Santa Barbara, California. I believe that's how you pronounce it. Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. What's happening, Michael?
Oh, not too much, Gil, not too much. Looking forward to a big day here. Daughter just turned 6, so I'm headed down to Universal Studios today. Going to check out Harry Potter World, going to check out Super Mario Land, so I'm excited.
She's into that, huh? 6 years old. What a great age, by the way.
Oh, it's phenomenal. She's so excited to go check out Harry Potter Land. That's going to be the highlight of her year, and so I can't wait to do it with her. And a nice time to go, too. It's a little bit warm there, but like, there's no crowds at all. And because of the tech outage, even less people are showing up. So I'm excited to go down there and have the park to ourselves.
Mike Somich, co-host of the Handle here with Matt Brown on the weekends. Here in VSiN.
Super Mario Land? That's a thing now? In Harry Potter World? Man, that's crazy.
6, man. Go ahead, Mike.
Super Mario Land looks incredible. They give you little wristbands, and you run around the park, and you, like, smash blocks with your wristband. You collect coins, and then you can, like, win the game because, like, you got to beat Bowser Jr. at the end. I'm, like, pumped up. to go to Super Mario
That sounds
Land.
Awesome. Do you, there has to be some kind of Mario Kart version or something, right? Like, there's got to be go-karts or something.
There's Bowser's Castle Mario Kart as well as one of the rides.
What the hell are you guys talking about?
Just like 90s Nintendo things.
Okay. Yeah, curious. By the way, 6, greatest age ever. Like 5 and 6, if they could only stay that size, you know? It's the most... all right. The handle. You and Matt Brown, you're obviously, you guys are all in on football already. You talk through this stuff. What is Matt Brown's? Let's do it this way. What is Matt Brown's? Because I know I've asked you what's your most non-conventional talk. What is the take that Matt Brown has on the handle? Let's promote the handle here. That you find the most ridiculous, and what is the take that you have that he finds the most egregious?
Well, that one's pretty easy. We just head up to the AFC North here. He is all in on the Bengals, and I am just not all in on the Bengals. I still don't believe in this secondary. I think this Bengals team has been elevated because what they did getting to the Super Bowl a couple years back, they haven't really proved that they're that team again. And I like Joe Burrow quite a bit, but he's had some health issues. We've seen Ja'Marr Chase have some health issues. Are we sure T. Higgins is like a number 1A type guy at wide receiver? And their secondary stinks. Like, their defense wasn't good at all last year. Lou Amarillo was phenomenal with in-game changes that kind of went away last year as well, and they're sitting here at plus 145. They're one of the highest win totals in the NFL. It's just betting on a lot of things that are going to go right, and I can't get to it with the price. And the take that he hates the most of mine is this Browns team is the best roster in the NFC North outside of the quarterback position. I think this Browns team's absolutely loaded from a defensive perspective. Great secondary, great defensive line. You get an offensive line back healthy that was absolutely destroyed last year. Instead of starting 5 quarterbacks, hopefully we just start 1. Nick Chubb's coming back. You add Jerry Jeudy to Amari Cooper and to Njoku. I'm all in on this Browns team, 6-1 to win the division, and he absolutely loves the Bengals, and I just don't get it at this price.
Well, Kelly and I don't even have to look at Kelly because I know we're thinking the exact same thing, which is we've worked with Matt, right, at Primetime Action. Matt's factory settings default to Bengals will win it all, don't they?
No, they factory reset to the Bengals will win.
The Bengals will win it all. He mispronounces the word, by the way. Bengals will win it all. But are we both, let me be the third guy in the room. Are both of you leaving out the elephant in the room, which is the Ravens? You don't see them win? You don't see them being part of this?
I think we both think that they are properly priced. I think that's kind of where it comes into, is that the Ravens are a very good football team. They are likely to, I think they're, when you're looking at the possible sets of outcomes for teams, I think the Ravens have one of the tightest windows. I think they win between 10 and 12 games. And that's kind of the downside and the upside for their season, assuming that Lamar Jackson stays healthy. So when you look at the Ravens, I just see a team that is correctly priced, that lost their DC, that may affect them a little bit. They lost Odell Beckham Jr. Doesn't sound like a big loss. We'll see what happens there. To me, the Ravens team is kind of correct. But if you're going to find an incorrect action in the market, or you have to have a second one that is propping that number up. And so for me, the reasons I like the Browns so much at 6-1 is that the Bengals are plus 145. It's not because the Ravens are plus 140. I think that is they're the deserving favorite inside this market. So it's just an interesting spot when you're gambling, because inevitably, if you like one team, you have to disagree with the number
That's
on another.
Right. That's right.
And so you kind of have to figure out where you're going to go with it. And, you know, another one for me is the Houston Texans, right? I think that they're going to be a good football team, but I think people completely changed the narrative on last year's season. I mean, this is a team in Houston that beat 0 playoff teams during the regular season. The best quarterback they faced was Lamar Jackson in week 1. The second best quarterback they faced was Baker Mayfield last year. Now this year they're playing a first place schedule. And so the train is just kind of run away from what the actual result of last year was for this Texans team, because they did add Diggs and they did add Hunter. But to me, they are mispriced inside that division, which is why I like the Colts, because all of a sudden the Colts don't get priced properly in my mind, with a significantly easier schedule and some serious upside at the quarterback position. So if you're going to like somebody, you have to inevitably dislike someone else. And in the case of the Ravens, I like the Browns. Matt likes the Bengals. I don't like the Bengals. He doesn't like the Browns. And so that's why we both get to those teams.
I'm with you on the Texans. I've said from the beginning, I like, you know, again, it's the two thoughts in your head at the same time thing. I like the Texans. No one likes C.J. Stroud better than I do. But these things aren't perfect graphs upward, right? Like, just because they soared last year doesn't mean that then they take the next step immediately. And they do play, as you point out, a different type of schedule. So I'm 100% with you there. This has nothing to do with sports betting, but back to the Ravens for a second, since we were talking AFC North, which, by the way, Kelly, will be featured in the in-season Hard Knocks. The entire division of the AFC North will be featured in the in-season Hard Knocks. So I'm pumped about that when we get around to that. John Harbaugh yesterday, did you see this press conference?
Yeah.
He, like, 2 minutes, and they only showed clips because, like, apparently it was a soliloquy about this. He said, you know how I say this stuff about ego, when all said and done, she'll be the greatest women's tennis player in the history? He's like, Lamar Jackson will be the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL, he said, when all is said and done. Why do you think he believes that? You think he's doing that for Lamar? What's your reaction to that?
I think he's doing it for Lamar.
Yeah.
I mean, it's partially personal ego as well, because let's say he does ascend to that mantle. What does that mean? That means that Harbaugh wins, what, 4 of the next 5 Super Bowls with Lamar? Like, it would take that type of,
that's right,
of postseason run for him to be able to anoint Lamar as the best quarterback ever. And I'm sure Harbaugh believes that they have the opportunity to do that. I bet he believed that they were the best team last year when everything was said and done. So you kind of have to believe that sense. And I know he feels he can get it done with Lamar. It seems like he has proven out that he can get it done with Lamar in the regular season. The big question for them is the playoffs. And last year, I talked about this heading into it. I thought there was a ton of pressure on that Ravens team. I mean, everything broke perfectly for them. It was a Chiefs team that was still struggling. There was nothing else left in the AFC. They got the one seed. They got the home games. They had to get through that AFC last year. And with the fact that they failed to do so, it's just hard for me to really get excited about this Ravens team. I think they're going to be a good team again in the regular season. I think they're going to be bullies, where if they get a lead, you want to back them. If they're coming from behind, we'll see what happens. But I don't have any faith in this team in the playoffs. I don't have any faith in Lamar Jackson in the playoffs. So when he has to throw the football, he gets it done, because at this point he's kind of proven that he can't. Like, and so until he does, prove me wrong.
Yeah. For those who, with a short memory, Baltimore beat Houston 34-10 in the division round this past year, and then lost to Kansas City at home 17-10 in the AFC Championship game.
That press conference kind of felt like Harbaugh yelling at Twitter, too, because it was on the heels of Lamar Jackson missing another practice due to illness, which Twitter had a lot of fun with, because that's become kind of a thing the past few years, that Lamar misses a lot of practices for being sick. So that was the vibe I was getting, is that John Harbaugh was yelling at people like me.
Two-time MVP award winner Lamar Jackson. Did you make any awards bets of any kind pre-flop?
I've got two bets. One, I've been banging the drum on this network for literally since the Super Bowl ended last year on Jared Goff for MVP. I bet him at 30-1. I bet him at 40-1. I bet him at 60-1. I bet him back at 40-1 when we went down. Now we're sitting at 22-1. The Lions schedule, especially early, is just ridiculous. This is a Lions team that could start out as fast as 9-0. I expect like 7-2, 8-1 more realistically. But let's say they are 7-2, 8-1, and we are 9 weeks into the season, 9 games into the season. Goff's going to be 6-1, 7-1 to win the MVP, because that's going to be a lot on that offense's back. And then you can create a portfolio around the ticket, or just let it ride, because there is a very good chance that he's going to be in the conversation right at the end. Other one for me is a rushing leader this year in the NFL. Give me Kyren Williams from the Los Angeles Rams. He only played since after he became the bell cow back. He averaged 100 yards rushing in every game. And you know McVay wants to run the football. You got a dynamic duo at wide receiver, which should allow them to open up the run game as well. I think Kyren Williams has a big season. He's 12-1 right now to lead the NFL in rushing.
I like that one. Okay. We'll come back. We'll talk baseball with Mike. Mike Somich, everybody, at SomoBomb18. That's the number 18. SomoBomb and left and right. And whatever else he might be betting. Horsies. I believe that's a technical term, Kelly. Horsies, I believe. Big horse guy.
Gave me a winner yesterday.
Yeah, did he?
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about him like he's not here. More with Somich on the other side. Numbers Game. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
July is ending with a bang. UFC 304 has not just one, but two titles on the line. Get your own crown. Jump in on all the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, the DraftKings Sportsbook, and use code VSIN, that's code V-S-I-N, for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours. We get texts, we get tweets. I always love when folks live text the show. Chris Felica, you know what his reaction to the election betting segment was, Kelly? He said, Jason is 1,000% correct on the quality of delis on Eastern Long Island. That was his reaction to that. And Steve Fezzik, incredulous about the July MLB wins total segment. He cannot believe that the number one team is only 11-5. He is apoplectic about it. He says that could be the worst 16-game record of the best MLB team ever, according to him. How the hell is the best record only 11-5, he says. Go flip a coin 30 times. He voices him, so his texts are awful. Go flip a coin 16 times, 30 times, and one of the trials will be 11-5 or better. Steve Fezzik. Oh, and then we get tweets as well. I always appreciate this. 3Jack, H3131. Welcome back from yet another vacation, Gil. In regards to politics, just remember it's all scripted just like the NFL. Okay. All right. Derby Day. Cannot wait till college football kick off, although I'm not particularly looking forward to the ensuing uncomfortable mom and dad Thanksgiving dinner fight with Futago. Oh, that's coming for sure. Mike Stacks, glad you're back. Hope vacay was great and love the pink shirt. It's fire.
Fire.
Thank you.
Looking good. Appreciate it.
Oh, and then Super Jerk, formerly the angriest guy in New Jersey and the angriest guy in Kentucky. He goes by Super Jerk now. He said, Vegas crybabies are killing me. We live in the middle of the desert. It's the middle of summer. Gonna be a little hot. Now I've seen a bug. Hey, we got bugs flying around out here. This is a calamity. Well, Super Jerk, if I may call you that, if that is your real name. West Nile virus, Kelly, this just in. As of July 3rd, the Southern Nevada Health District reported 7 cases of West Nile here in Clark County, including 5 new cases.
Well, that's not good.
That was earlier this month. That's not fun.
Watch out for them skeeters.
Skeeters. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Somich, kind enough to join us. Samo bombing. There we go.
Hey,
I thought I could do it. Well, it's SamoBomb18 on Twitter, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Mike, any baseball bets today?
I got two today. The first one, we're going to go to the Boston Red Sox here, taking on the Colorado Rockies. Love fading Austin Gomber, who's on the mound here for the Rockies. You got Tanner Houck on the mound for the Red Sox. I laid the run and a half here. So I laid the run and a half with the Red Sox on the road, minus 108. I had a little bit higher number for this. I came up in like the low minus 120s number range. So getting 10, 12 cents of value, happy to take it, especially with the pitcher I like to fade, and Tanner Houck, one that I enjoy betting on. Also like this Red Sox lineup in Coors there. And then the other bet, and this is one I'm excited to talk with you, Gil. Give me the Pittsburgh Pirates here, minus 122, taking on the St. Louis Cardinals. Mitch Keller on the mound. And Gil, I talked about this last Monday when you were out. I bet the Pirates at 110-1 to win the National League pennant last weekend when I was in Vegas, with the simple reasoning that they're about 5-1 to make the playoffs. That's gone down a little bit because of the stretch that they had. Took 2 out of 3 from the Phillies to start out the second half here. And they're down to 65-1 to win the NL in certain places. You can still get them at 100-1 right now on DraftKings.com. I love this Pirates team in short series. Give me this Pirates rotation in a playoff, and let's see what happens. Because you've got Keller. We were hoping for Jones to come back. And you've got Paul Skeens. I'll take 6 starts for those 3 guys up against pretty much any rotation in the NL. And the beauty of having 110-1, you could start hedging that puppy as soon as the first round if you need to. There are a lot of ways to make that ticket profitable if you can just make the playoffs. So I took the Pirates 110-1 to win the NL. Right now they're sitting at 100-1 on DraftKings. What do you think of that one, Gil?
I love the thinking behind it because, as we've said many times here on this show, and I'm sure you have as well on yours, the Major League Baseball playoff format is such that if you can just sneak your way in, right, if you can just sneak your way in as one of the 3 wild cards, then it does become a best of 3, assuming you're not, it becomes a best of 3 and then a best of 5. Anything can happen in those types of series, right? The sample size is too small for the better talent to manifest. As Billy Beane famously said, my blank doesn't work in the playoffs. So I think we were talking about this, me, Will, Chris, and Todd Wishnev and Fezzik, we're on a text chain. And we were talking about this because Todd made a similar bet on the Cardinals. He made it, I don't know if he did it to win. What did he do it on? To win the NL, maybe? Similar thought. I like your Pirates one better because, again, it's just, can you sneak in? And the thing with the Cardinals is this very strange, and again, it's the same philosophy, right? You have a big number, then you get in, you can earn, just like you described with the Pirates. With the Cardinals, though, in Michaelis, Gray, and Lynn, Miles Michaelis, Sonny Gray, Lance Lynn, you literally have the number two, number three, and number four pitchers in all of baseball in most favorable strand rates to date. In other words, the three of them, and I don't ever remember in all my years betting baseball, which goes back to like the Eisenhower administration, I don't ever remember three frontline starters being in the top four of like low strand rates. That is what we call unsustainable. So for them, I just feel at some point they won't have enough to sneak in. Pirates are a different story. Because you're right. Like, they might be able to get there, and then the frontline pitching is there. It's going to be fascinating. I love the number, man. That's the thing with the National League, though, right? This is the basis. Three teams have got to get in as wild cards. You tell me who it's going to be.
Yeah, not exactly. The bottom two especially. Because let's say the Braves get that first wild card. I think that's a pretty fair assumption. Okay, it's the Cardinals. Well, maybe not. It's the Cardinals. It's the Mets. It's the Diamondbacks. It's the Padres. Why not the Pirates, right?
Why not?
Like, none of those teams are good.
Yeah.
If there's going to be two teams that are not good that make the playoffs, essentially, from the NL. And like you said, like I said, like, give me this rotation in a short series. Give me Skeens. Like, this is a team that is at least built to try and win those short series if you get the right starting pitching matchups and they pitch well. So willing to take a shot at a big number. And really it does, Gil, you said it. It comes out of the number, right?
Yeah.
You never bet this at 40-1. You never bet this at 50-1. But when you're sitting there at 110-1, then you're like, yeah, no, I can monetize this in a lot of different ways. I can monetize this and still be profitable long-term. I mean, if Skeens goes, he might be a dog or might be a favorite in one of these games. You just bet against them on the money line, and all of a sudden you could still win the series and hedge your bet. Like, there's a bunch of different ways that you can cover this.
Who do you feel, trade deadline coming up in 8 days? Obviously, we were talking earlier, Tarek Skubal. Rumors are the Dodgers and Orioles have inquired within. Crochet, a lot of people wondering. The beauty of Skubal, he's under team control. So that's what, for like a multiple years. So that's why they're super excited to acquire him. What is your hunch? What do you think the biggest move here in the trade deadline is? What team, what player?
I think it's going to be I don't think Skubal moves. I think you have to try and build around him, especially. I think it's like 2.5 more years of control as well. So there's a lot of player control there. I think Crochet is the biggest player that moves. I think it's probably to Baltimore, because when rubber hits the road, they simply have the most to give up of any franchise. They have their cupboard is loaded in AAA. They have a bunch of hitters they can go give out. And if it is Skubal, it's going to be like top tier guys that we're talking about. We're talking about like Jackson Holliday that's going to be involved in that deal, if that's going to be the move. So I think Crochet probably the biggest name that goes. I think he probably goes to the Orioles. I would keep an eye on Vladdy. I think that there is a chance that Vladdy moves, especially with the way that this Blue Jays team is kind of panned out. I think Bichette, it was more likely to move, but again, it's hard to say Bichette's going to move because his value is down. You're going to get 75, 60 cents on the dollar because of how he's played this year. One thing I will say, I am more confident that the Orioles are going to do something at the deadline than I was a couple weeks ago. Because of that, I bet them to be the number one seed in the AL. You can get that plus 145 right now. I think that's a incredible value over the division play. Right now, they're minus 125 to win the division, but plus 145 to be the one seed in the AL. If the AL one seed doesn't come from the AFC or the AL East, I will be absolutely shocked, because I think it's going to be the Yankees or the Orioles. I think the Guardians fade out. No team from the West is going to do it. So you're essentially getting, call it 60 cents, 70 cents free by playing one seed in the AL versus to win the division.
That's the beauty of baseball. So many different ways to bet it. Find the one that makes most sense for your conviction. Real quick, 30 seconds. We have this VSiN wide Major League Baseball futures bet contest. Remind me who you and Matt Brown on the handle, what your bet was.
I think we're probably going to be changing it. It was the Royals to win the AL Central, which is not looking as good as it was a few weeks back.
I'd give it a couple weeks and then reassess, because they might have a little streak in them right here. So not done.
The home road splits for the Royals are one of the most wild things I've ever seen.
And it makes no sense. Like, none at all. It just doesn't. It's frustrating.
We had someone come on the show over the weekend claim Astros shenanigans with the Royals at home, and that's why they're hitting so well there.
Oh, is that's what it is?
that's what we've got to.
That's where you go to immediately?
I was like, all right, I haven't heard that before.
Mike, appreciate it. Great seeing you, man. Enjoy Universal, is it? Universal Studios?
Universal.
Enjoy it, man.
All right, have a good one, guys.
Mike Somich at Samobomb18. Our tennis bet, Astra Sharma was down a set and a break. She fights back, wins the second set, and we are starting the third.
Oh.
Let's go! We've done all we could do. Gojo and Golic are next. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.